You're listening to Face Off, episode 69, recorded May 16th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about all kinds of things about web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. Well, Mark, I think I'm getting the summer bug. I'm feeling like summer's in the air. I heard actually someone explain yesterday that Montana's weather is very manic. You know, someone said bipolar, and the proper description is manic. There is no in between. It was snowing here in Bozeman a week ago, and today it's like 80 degrees outside. We got, you know, the kids and families in the field behind my house are playing soccer, so, you know, we can hear their
yelling and screaming.
Yelling and screaming and general having fun outside in the gorgeous weather. Another sign of summer is Arnie Palmer's. We got a couple Arnie Palmer's here, which is I've had the half and half, the half iced tea, half lemonade drinks before, but I didn't know that they were called Arnie Palmer's. I don't really know what the whole story is with Arnie Palmer, the golfer, but when we were actually at CES, the friend we went with, Sky Johnson, was like, oh yeah, we should go have Arnie Palmer's, and you and I were kind of like, Arnie Palmer's,
what's that?
And yeah, and Sky and Rob were like, oh man, we got to go get you some Arnie Palmer's. So, so now when it gets a little warm out, it's a good time to have a nice cold drink.
Yeah, so they're like a big, they're like a tall boy. If you want to, like, what, how many ounces? Like,
non-alcoholic.
Yeah, but it looks like, well, it looked like one when he first brought it out. It was like a silver can.
Big, yeah, it does. Can. It kind of looks like a big tall boy, like someone's drinking a giant beer or something, or malt liquor.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's just the Arizona iced tea can. So it's getting there, summertime, time to whip out the Arnie Palmer's and maybe go do some camping and all kinds of stuff.
If it's summer in Montana, it's probably warmer wherever you guys are. So it's pretty cold around here. So.
It gets chilly, but also, I mean, in the summertime, surprisingly, people think Montana stays really cold all the time. I mean, it gets up to 90s and 100s up here a lot.
But we do get some weird weather, because I know the 4th of July parade in Butte, it snowed before during that. That's just crazy.
Yeah, I think it was some here in Montana that had the biggest temperature difference recorded, where it was like,
we've talked about that a few times. Like,
jeez.
One of we hold like three of the top five or something, temperature swings. So,
I don't think I live anywhere else, though. I like it here. So let's get into our news and follow-ups this week. So just a little bit of news I want to talk to you about and see what you thought. There's been a couple of big sites doing some slight redesigns lately. One big one is the Google search results page has been redesigned, as well as their logo. They did some redesign work on that.
I like their logo. It looks smoother and cleaner and more modern.
Yeah, it definitely looks a little more modern.
I like their fade-in. I like how they got rid of the underline links on some of their links. What I don't like, but it's probably just because I'm used to it, is that sidebar when you actually do a search. I think it's because I've been using Google for so long. It's like, what is this sidebar stuff?
Yeah, it just looks really different. And for a while there, I could have swore that there wasn't a lot of the searches I had did not have sponsored links on the right. And so I was like, wow, are they trying to get out of the sponsored link business? Because that's stupid.
No way.
No, so it's there. I don't know if they're just maybe trying to reorganize, but I just now that finally I see an ad here when I search for my name, but that was kind of weird. There wasn't there for a couple of days, I noticed, when I was searching anyways.
So when we talked about evidence-based web design, where you go and test things and figure out which colors and layouts people like, Google was one of those that would test a color of blue, like 31 different shades of blue before they figured out what the best one was. So it's interesting that they made these kind of changes, because you would expect, I mean, you're pretty much sure that they went out and did some tests and made sure that this was what people wanted.
But you think it would be sort of more of a transitional change rather than, I mean, it was just kind of one day.
It's like, boom.
I saw no announcement or anything. It was just you logged in, you're like, whoa, new search results page. But it was very subtle. It was subtle enough that you noticed it, but it wasn't, you know, you didn't know what was going on. You were kind of like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah.
Another sort of big site that did a slight redesign was Wikipedia.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job of making their site look a lot nicer without changing a whole lot. It really feels like the same site, but
they didn't change. The funny part is they didn't change the homepage. That's the same. It's the actual article pages are different. So actually, I mean, it's like
they changed their logo. Globe. Yeah, it's a little bit
on the homepage though. The homepage one does not look any different at all.
Well, one thing they did change on the homepage for sure is that very top portion. You mean the homepage, not like
the homepage.
Not the main page.
Yeah, I'm talking about when you go and it's got all the different languages you can search in.
That one is that's the same.
But you're talking like just the language, the language
where you
page.
Click on like English. It's okay. The main page. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that design did change as well.
The logo in the top left is a bit more modern looking.
Looks a little smoother. Okay.
And then the top navigation where it kind of fades.
Right.
Oblivion, which you had mentioned you didn't really like.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I think about it. I'm one of those guys. I have a thing where I look at a web page and I try to make it tangible. I don't like things that are like tricks to the eye that cannot exist. The way I look at it, the main page to me looks like it's sort of like raised up, and then the gradient in the back would kind of reinforces that. But then they have like the read and the view source tabs. Like the read tab fades up into the white of this white on the top of the page, and to me I just don't like it. It looks too ethereal. I guess it's a weird thing with me where I try to visualize everything sort of in real life, like if this web page was carved into stone, what would it look like?
Yeah, but I think overall, I think they did an improvement. Yeah. They didn't like go overboard and put a bunch of graphics all over the place or change the layout. One thing you don't want to do when you do redesigns of sites that people are really used to is change the way where the links are located or something. Yeah. Like if they were to move that bar to the right, the sidebar to the right or something, people would just go nuts.
Right, exactly. And so this was just really subtle, really clean, just kind of nice little touch-ups to their design to make it a little more modern and nice. Same with Google. I think they're both pretty definitely steps in the right direction.
Yeah, just subtle, but subtle enough to be like to notice and say, well, it looks a little bit nicer.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into our geek tool of the week. So I don't actually own this week's geek tool. I don't know. I kind of got over that. I was trying to only buy stuff that I owned, and that just meant I spent a lot of money. So I'm looking to people I know and stuff they've purchased. And so my coworker Ryan Heimbuck bought one of these. And it's really cool. It's called the Wacom Bamboo Pen and Touch Fun Small Tablet. So it's a tablet in the sense of, like Wacom or Wacom. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I think it's Wacom, but they've done tablets forever. They do these pressure sensitive tablets that are great for graphic designers because if you apply more pressure, it senses that
thicker
and
brush.
It makes it a thicker brush. Exactly. But this one is cool because a lot of times we have is you either get a tablet that comes with a pen and a mouse that only works on the tablet, which is okay. But a lot of people don't want to use a different mouse. We have a mouse for particular reasons. So then you end up with your tablet on one side and your mouse on the other, which takes up a lot of desk space. Well, this new one is really cool because it has a pen input, but it also does touch input. It does multi-touch input.
Oh, like multi-touch, huh?
Yeah, like a big trackpad. So you put it next to your keyboard just like you would, your other tablet, and you don't need to have any mouse at all because now you can just use it like a touchpad. Two fingers scroll down. I think you can do pinch zoom and stuff. And then when you want to do something graphic with your pen, you just pull it out, and it's got a little sleeve on the side. It looks great. It's small. It's about the size of a your average size mouse pad, so it's not huge, not taking up a ton of desk space. It looks great. It's black, really sleek, nice surface. Really cool tool. My coworker, like I said, Ryan, got it, and he immediately started. He decided he wanted to do some documentation on some stuff he was working in. Everything had like cute little drawings in it because he wanted to use it so bad. And it was really cool. So I think when I decide that I need to bite the bullet and get another tablet, I think I'm going to get one of these because I like the idea that you can use it as a touchpad as well.
Is it so? I'm looking at the screenshots on this, and it looks like a Mac app. Does it work with Windows? Like, is it a hardware thing where, like, when you're scrolling, it uses like this middle scroll thing?
That's a good question. I don't know. Knowing Wacom, you'd think it would work in Windows. I know the touchpad functionality will at least work in Windows. It will work as an input device. The multi-touch stuff, I'm not sure. It depends on probably your version of Windows or depending upon if you have to install, a Wacom app on your computer or not.
Uh-huh. It says it works with Adobe Photoshop Elements for Win. Okay, so it does work for 7.0 Win and Mac. So it does work.
Right.
Cool.
And it comes with Adobe Photoshop Elements. So
battery really... free, so much to like charge or work off the USB. Or...
Well, the pen does not need a battery. That's the cool part about, you know, Wacom stuff is it doesn't need a battery because it uses, I don't know, it's the same thing as my tablet PC has a Wacom tablet in it. And it's, it, I don't know, they just use a technology that's in the tip of the stylus to detect it. It doesn't require a battery to use. So all you have to do is plug this into your USB and you're good to go.
I wonder how it does the pressure thing, something underneath it or?
I think, well, if there's, you know, if there's like, even if it's like magnetic in the tip of the thing, you know, it can sense sort of how close it is. Because that's all it is, I think, is a distance calculation. It's not really how much pressure you put on the tablet.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah,
I don't know.
So you can use your fingers and the stylus. And
yeah, it's like a big, you know. Well, actually, speaking of a big, it's kind of like a big Apple touchpad. So let's go back to some news and follow-ups. You've had your laptop now for about a week, right?
Yep.
What are your thoughts? What do you think?
I like it. I've done some development on it, and it seems to work just fine. I like the touchpad. I said before, with scrolling with the two fingers, you can just do it about just with any side of it or angle, with either hand. It's very ergonomic. I don't really have a whole lot to say yet. it just works. And
right. So, I mean, it's sort of reinforced. It's an amazing piece of hardware. I was using it this weekend. We were playing around with it. And I've been around these enough that they weren't very new to me. But, you know, it's a really good laptop. I mean, it's that unibody aluminum is so solid. It feels very well put together. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like you don't feel like some of my older laptops that are plastic. Like sometimes when you set them on your leg, you kind of feel like you can feel the plastic pieces holding it together kind of creaking, you know, and you can think over time that's just going to get more and more loose. But not with that. I mean, it's a very solid thing. The screen is really glossy, but I mean, usually it's also so bright that it's easy to tilt so that the light is out of your way and you can still see the screen just fine. It doesn't discolor it or anything like that.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed. I was looking at that Django was released in 1.2 on Monday, and I looked at their color scheme. And it was like green and yellow, and I've been to the site many times, but on this monitor, it seemed to stand out a lot more. Just the colors were more vibrant.
Very vibrant.
I don't know if it was because they're calibrated out of the factory or...
they just use really good panels in them is what I've heard. There's a new kind, I can't remember, my coworkers were talking about it, a new type of panel that's supposed to be really good that Apple is one of the few companies that is putting it in both their desktop displays and their laptops.
Interesting.
I can't remember what it was, though. It wasn't OLED, but it was like one of those new LED technologies that was supposed to be really, really good. So
cool.
So you're happy with it, huh?
Yep. Other than that, I don't really have a whole lot to say.
Not sending it back to the factory yet?
No. the shortcuts and things are getting me a little bit. And
that'll get to you.
Sometimes when I'm trying to find a window because I minimized it and I have to like hunt for it.
Yeah.
But I think it's just me getting used to it.
Right. All right. Let's get into our web apps for the week. The first web app we have this week is called gtmetrics.com. So a lot of times I haven't been as good at this as I should be, but we should be analyzing the performance of our websites. And some of the two popular tools for that are, of course, YSlow, which we've talked about before. YSlow is a really good way to test the speed of your website. It looks at all kinds of things that affect how fast your website loads. And then another one is a Google product that is called PageSpeed. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. I haven't used PageSpeed, but I know YSlow is a plugin for your browser, correct?
Yes, and PageSpeed, I believe, comes in Chrome if you do the right click or whatever and go to Developer Tools and go to the right side, and you have to turn it on. But you turn your resource tracking on, and it can, I believe, it shows.
Okay. So if you don't want to mess with any of that, what GTmetrics does is it runs a YSlow and a PageSpeed calculation on whatever website you put in. So, you know, like I put in jaderobbins.com. This is the very interesting part. My YSlow grade is a D, and my page speed grade is a B. So, but then what's cool about it is with each one of them, you can kind of look down and you can see what is wrong with it. It just does all the stuff that PageSpeed and YSlow do. They tell you all that stuff, but it does it in one place. You don't have to install any plugins or anything. The downside is, of course, if you're working on an internal project, something that isn't out on the internet, you can't run this on it because it can't access it. Or if it requires a password, username, and password, you can't run this on it because it needs to be able to get in. Mm-hmm. So for those, you're going to want to use, you know, PageSpeed or YSlow, the browser plugin. But just for a lot of websites, you can use this. And the cool part is if you sign up for an account, you can do things like log in and track the performance history of your website. That's so handy. As you're making changes, it'll show you that, you know, over the past month, you've really improved your speed and your score has gotten better.
That's great. The page, or you could track page size, page load time, or whatever over time. See if you're starting to add too many JavaScript icons,
right? Exactly.
External links, or you know, getting out of control with that. Or, yeah.
I'm glad it does both of them too, because what we found is there's some things that YSLO will ping you on, you know, or, you know, dock you on that I think are kind of silly. Like the fact that you aren't using a content delivery network for like your images.
Yeah.
You know, for jaderobbins.com, I don't need to do that. That's just kind of stupid. That's a lot of work for something like yeah. that. Whereas, you know, PageSpeed just kind of says, you know, if you're not using it, then it's not applicable to your current, you know, to your current setup. But I'm assuming if you did use one, then it would probably rate how good or bad that content delivery network is.
Yeah, CDN is definitely out of most people's league. For, you know, for us, personal website.
Yeah,
definitely.
But it did bring, you know, I mean, it did bring, you and I have been talking about CSS frameworks and CSS tools. Like there's one for Ruby called Sass. And little things like we were talking about how Sass has the ability to import other CSS pages or other Sass pages. So you know, like a lot of times you might have three CSS pages that you load, but, you know, things like YSLO, you know, will ding you on that because that's more requests. Whereas something like Sass will allow you to edit various Sass files and really compartmentalize your CSS code so that it's easier to find stuff and then combine it when it generates it, which, you know, little things like that you don't think of. But like here, I mean, I got a really bad score for because I didn't combine my external CSS.
Yeah, if you got like three different CSS files or something, it'll ding you a little bit. And it also minifies. The Sass will just minify everything.
Yeah, you can set Sass to minify it so that it's, you know, super small and improve your score. And but there's little things I didn't think of, you know, like but there's some things too I also don't know how to fix. Like,
well, if you actually click on one of these things, it tells you a little bit more information about.
Oh yeah, it'll tell you, you know, why you got that score.
What does this mean, and what, you know, things like you I can do to fix it.
Like I got a B on my specify image dimensions score for Google PageSpeed, and it like when I click on that, it tells me that these are the following images that do not have a size preset. And you should probably do that so that when the page loads, it doesn't get all tweaky and weird and have to, you know, do all that calculation. You know, it knows ahead of time what the size of the image is.
Uh-huh. One of the ones I got is the fave icon should be set to expire 1 month into the future. We just talked about a caching episode, and so I should be doing that for
sure. Yeah, a lot of the speed stuff on here, like definitely YSLO will ding you on caching. You need to be doing proper caching, which... like I said, a lot of the stuff I'm not very good at. Like I'm not very good at caching. Or one thing I did find is you really got to be careful. And I had a little blog post rant about this, you know, I think 6 months ago, is you got to be careful what external stuff you're putting in your websites. So like I have, you know, a couple plugins with WordPress that, you know, really dinged my YSLO score because I didn't know this, but I look and they're injecting like 3 new JavaScript includes into the header of my website and like 3 new CSS includes. And for a plugin that is really not that super important to me. And I was like, whoa, you know, you got to be careful what you're doing. And the other part is a lot of these are external JS and CSS calls. Like they're hosting the CS and JS files on their own server. So if their server goes down, that's going to totally impact the performance and usability of my website.
Yeah, definitely. And I had it was a related issue. It was more like the page loading time, and it was had to do with the actual server. When you start getting into VPSs and stuff, I kind of forgot about how to do system admin because I always had it taken care of for me. And I found out that it was just, I was doing a lot of stuff that was inefficient. I had too many Ruby processes going for how much RAM I had and things. And it was just, it was really bad.
Totally.
When you don't have free memory, the site just goes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even if you do cache and stuff, the sites just come out real slow. Each page comes up slow. And
totally. So check it out. It's at gtmetrix.com. Our second web app that we want to talk about is called, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like Sordai. So if you go to it, just so you know, it looks like it's made by someone in Brazil because the default language is Portuguese, but you can click English up at the top. And what this app does is it helps you if you're doing like a promotion or a contest via Twitter. So like, let's say you say, you know, I'm going to give this away to one of my followers. And then I've always thought like, man, you got to write this script to go into the API, grab all your followers, pick a random follower out of that, you know. Well, this does all that for you. So you go to, you know, sortie.me, you hit start and it will OAuth, you know, connect you to Twitter via OAuth to your account. And then when you do is, actually, let me do it real quick here. I did this earlier, but... and then, you know, you say, oh, I want to allow access, so you have access to this. And then you say, okay, I either want you to draw just a winner from one of my followers, or one of my followers that retweeted a particular URL. So like a lot of times you say, you know, retweet faceoffshow.com, you know, to win
something.
Yeah. So either or, you can pick up to 10 people or, you know, one to, you know, up to 10 people that you want to draw. But let's say, you know, we got, you know, one thing we want to give away. I want to draw from my followers. And it'll just, you know, it grabs all my followers, picks a random name. And that's funny, actually, because if we were doing a competition, one of our listeners, Vasily M., would have won.
Sweet.
So, you know, if you don't, you know, I've always thought of that. I was like, wow, you know, like Scott Bourne on Twitter, who's a photography guy, he is always giving away stuff. And I was like, you must have had someone program something for you to do that because it's something you just can't do by hand.
Uh-huh. Pull all the followers or something, do a random deal.
Yeah, you can't like go to all your followers and look at them and count, okay, random number generator, okay, you know, 30 and then count 30 followers. You know, you can't do it. Like this web app will do that for you.
The cool thing about this is they use random.org, which is they actually use true random numbers. I read here one time about how they did it, and they like hook radios and stuff up to the computer and like take the analog sound from the radio and convert it to digital and then take hashes of that to like make these random numbers. So it's like, it's ridiculous. So, but anyways, it's really cool that they're using something like random.org and like building upon somebody else's randomization.
Totally. Huh, I did not know that. I'm going to have to check out. Third web app is random.org, which will generate true random numbers for you. And I'm actually going to look at how they do it because that's pretty cool. Check it out. SORTEIE.ME. I have no idea how to pronounce it. Hey, if you guys have some news, follow-ups, or a web app you want us to take a look at, please go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know. We always want to hear about what you guys are checking out and talk about what you want us to talk about. All right, our topic this week is we're continuing the trend of talking about HTML5 last week. This week we're talking about CSS3.
Yeah, so we'll get right into this, and the first thing we got is borders.
Well, can we 2 seconds? I just want to take
to jump in there.
Well, I know you're really excited. The big thing that we kind of want to talk about, so CSS3, again, like HTML5, is a specification that isn't fully ratified. Right. It's being in development. You know, they're expecting quite a long time before it'll be fully accepted, you know, because kind of like we talked with HTML5, these new specs, people are very excited about them. They want to fix a bunch of the problems with the old specs. So there's a lot of discussion and back and forth going on with these between industry experts and the people writing the spec and
all Microsoft and
yeah, exactly.
Adobe
so,
and
but I'm
everybody
really,
has their own interests and
actually
it's hard to get everybody to agree.
I'm probably more excited about CSS3 than I am HTML5, just because I'm not doing a lot of the cool stuff. People, you know, HTML5, the things that people are doing with the canvas,
yeah,
is amazing.
Yeah,
and it's a little too hardcore for me right now. So I, you know, a lot of the CSS3 stuff, I'm really more pumped about. So let's dig into it. What's the first thing that, you know, kind of the new thing that's happening in CSS3?
So with the borders, we've got, and one of these is going to be awesome. And I'm gonna just talk about that one right now. Border radius. This is rounded corners.
Yep.
You know, this is just awesome.
The internet has had to hack around these forever. If you use a browser that doesn't support it, they a lot of them do these crazy things where they put a bunch of divs up top with you know, widths that are going smaller.
Yeah.
Or have to do goofy image floats up
in the corners or use the same one but rotate it.
Yeah.
Use the same little arc but rotate it.
Exactly.
Around.
So this is cool. Also, you can use images for borders. You can set a shadow, which is really cool. We like that. And also with the border color, you can use fading gradients, which is a nice touch.
Yeah, you can kind of make 3D looking borders going around and stuff. But yeah, like border radius, that saves a bunch of time.
I mean, we actually just used a shadow in one of our projects where, you know, it's one of those things that's great. It degrades very nicely. You know, if they don't support the shadow, then it doesn't look terrible, but that
little
shadow
better,
just adds such a nice little touch.
But if it's not there, it's like, yeah, whatever. The next thing we got backgrounds. You can set the background origin. You can clip it so you can kind of cut it off. Mm-hmm. You can set the size of it so it no longer... You don't have to do the position thing where you say from here to here. Right. You can kind of just set the size.
Right. Or if it is a really big image, you could just set the size for repeating, right? So if you want, if it's a really big image, but you want it to be smaller and repeated more often, you can change the size of it and have it repeat.
You can have multiple backgrounds in one
area.
Cool. That's kind of cool.
That's way nice.
And then we got colors. This is kind of cool. HSL colors. This is hue, saturation, and lightness. You've probably seen one of these when you have you ever seen like a color wheel? Where you got the colors going around, and as you get into the middle, it's kind of lighter. And it's got
the one slider on the side for the sort of lightness of it. Yeah.
So what I think is cool about that is you can, so with a hex value, if you're like, I kind of want a blue, let's just give me a blue. I don't want to like go into Photoshop and get my color dropper out or whatever. I just want a blue. How would you do that with hex decimal? You wouldn't really, you couldn't really memorize
it's
them,
tough.
Right?
You remember it's, you know, you remember you can find out where the blue is on there, but then you're like, how much red do I add and how much, you know?
Yeah. So with HSL, what you could kind of do is you're like, oh, blue is, you know, the first, so hue is the degree around the circle. So you could say like 240 or whatever, you know, that that's where the oranges are, the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And then saturation is the, how much percent of full color it is. Right. And then the lightness is the third value. So you can kind of say, well, I've got this blue that is a 180, 42, and 50 for the lightness. And you're like, I want it a little bit lighter for my hover. You can just take that color and take the 50 and make it maybe a 30.
Right.
And there you go.
There you go.
You don't have to get your color dropper out and make a gradient and select the middle or whatever. So I think it's kind of cool if you're just working in your CSS and you don't want to open up your graphics program or whatever. Pretty cool. And then HSLA is just... opacity.
You right. The opacity, so like the next thing is it supports, you know, it's sort of alpha level transparency using HLSA or RGBA. So you can change the opacity, add, you know, make things a little see-through.
And there's also opacity for images and things.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people using that.
Yeah. Really cool.
Text effects. And I'm starting to see this is one of the things that I really actually, I like the effect is the text shadow. If it's very subtle, like maybe one or two pixels, I'm starting to see this on tons of sites, GitHub, just tons of sites that are using that. It's one of those things that if this text shadow is not there, it's not a big deal.
Degrades very nicely. Again, if you don't have, if the browser doesn't support it. So that's, I think, where I'm seeing more people use it.
If it's there, it's a nice touch. It looks like the font is kind of pressed into the metal look or whatever.
Looks really good.
In the case of GitHub. Text overflow. This is, if you've ever seen like a small search box, but you've got a bunch of text in there, like, sometimes a lot of people will do the dot, dot, dot to indicate that there's more to it. And then you kind of put your mouse in there. And what this is, you could have a text box that has a huge long thing of text, but you can specify the, you don't have to have dots, but you could, you know, dots would be, make sense. Three dots and then it would overflow. Another one is word wrap. Microsoft was pushing that one. I didn't really get the reasoning for why that was there.
Is the word wrap the, like, where it'll follow an image, like wrap around an image?
No,
or?
It's for like if a div is a certain size, but you have a really long word, it won't. It cuts the word instead of like dropping that whole word down.
Okay.
So I guess that's
kind of There's like a big problem with, or not a big problem, but sometimes text looks really good justified. In general, right? You know, it makes it, it looks like one big column of text. We like it. It reads easy, but it also does some goofy things sometimes when you have big letters or spaces. Like sometimes your space between words will be really massive if you have a big word on the line.
Yeah, if you have a big word, it normally if a div is a certain width, it will drop that entire word down. Right. With this, it would split that word in half.
Interesting. Cool.
User interface, there's box sizing. I was trying to understand this one. This is where you could specify like a split of you could specify a one div and then have it split and not have to do as much markup. Float left, float right.
Cool.
Resize. This one was kind of cool. If you've ever used Chrome, you know in like a text area, you've got that little three little lines where you can grab it and you can make the text area bigger.
Yes.
WordPress does this.
Love it.
This is, you could just put resize on a div or anything really. And
that's great.
Resize it.
That's nice because it like I hate when I have a text area box that is too small. I always have to make it bigger. It drives me insane.
Outline was like a border that was outside of the box.
Huh.
Specify another like area. It's kind of cool. And then other things, we've got media queries. You could do it had things to do with like TV displays and you could set the width and different things like that. They even had an example with like 3D glasses. If this screen, you know, the CSS files was specific for 3D glasses.
Oh man.
It's interesting.
Put a blue div, you know, left 10 pixels.
Yeah.
Wow.
This one was cool. Multi-column layout. It's kind of like the grid layouts that we've talked about, grid 960 grid system and blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
You can basically just say this is three columns and span it this wide.
Okay.
This many EM or whatever.
Cool. So instead of having to like muck around with floating and all that.
Exactly. I could see this if they do it right. I think I could see this as kind of replacing the whole grid.
Totally.
CSS systems. You won't have to do all that floating and all that stuff. and then web fonts. That was a big one where you could actually include the font file for the site and then actually like embed custom fonts.
Right. And we were actually looking at this. This is funny because we were like, oh, you know, that would be so nice to use, but I bet no browser supports it. But this is the really funny part. Internet Explorer has supported this since Internet Explorer
5. Something.
5.
Yeah.
But in true Microsoft fashion, they support it only with a particular font
their own
file.
Proprietary
yeah,
font.
Their own proprietary font format, which is just ridiculous. So we kind of figured out a way to get a. I mean, if you can get an. What is it?
EOT.
EOT. If you can get an EOT file, the Microsoft file, you can. You basically. What you do is with these, when you embed the fonts, is you declare the font family. So you say, like, this font family is Jade's font, and the source is, you know, Jade's font dot whatever. Yep. So you could specify one that was like Jade's font, and then Jade's font IE, and then the, you know, the IE one points to the source of that E or I can't, whatever, the Microsoft file.
EOT, yeah.
And then when you go below in your font stack, you would just put the IE one first, and then, you know, if your browser that is not Internet Explorer doesn't support it, it'll degrade down to your regular one, which yep. will have your font. But if it's Internet Explorer, it'll handle that one. So I think that would work. But geez, that is so Microsoft.
And it's tricky. Like EOTs don't support, so certain fonts don't allow embedding. And I don't know which ones do and which ones don't. But if you try to like convert it to EOT, it won't let you and things. Yeah. So it's kind of tricky. But I was surprised. Like it was like too good to be true. It was like, oh, IE supports this. Like why that?
It always was know? Too. It absolutely was
it
too
was
good
like,
to
well,
be
then
true.
Why are people using these Flash hacks and stuff to do this if it was already there? But yeah, it's definitely too good to be true.
Yep.
But yeah.
Okay, so the other thing that CSS3 adds a lot of is new selectors, which is how you select items to apply styles to them. There a lot of the new ones that they're adding sort of almost like regex sort of searchable things. So uh-huh. like, you know, you could say E with or a lot
begins
of times
begins with this type
yeah,
of string.
Yeah, exactly. So like, oh, if you know the type of it begins with foo, then it'll do it. The next one is it adds basically a lot more of them selecting childs and parents. So you can say like, you know, the nth child or the last child, the first child, so you can apply styles yeah. just to the first
that
and last.
That'd be great to do alternating list items and things.
Right, exactly. So you don't have to do sort of a hack inside your programming
yeah,
to do it now.
Yeah, class equals alt or whatever. You can just
exactly.
Nth child. You see a lot of this in JavaScript too, where they're selecting every other
yeah.
one and stuff. So
some other cool ones involving children is, you know, if it's empty, as in it has no children, you know, which you happens a lot. You kind of have to think about that ahead of time. But now you can just apply a different style to something if it is empty. And then if it is full, apply a different style. You know, like if you want tighter margins because there's uh-huh. no children underneath, you know, it totally makes sense. They are enabled and disabled now. You can, you know, if it is disabled, apply this style. If it's enabled, apply this style, which is great because usually you just created like a class called disabled where uh-huh. you grade everything out.
Yep.
And then, you know, they have one that is like not, so you can, you know, say if it's not this, it just adds a little bit more programmatic elements to it in that you can, you know, be a little more specific and not have to do it all in your program. CSS will be able to handle it.
Yeah. And they added another one, the tilde. If for example, the pre-element comes after H1 or something, then style that.
Yeah.
Otherwise don't.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, totally. So we're running out of time. We definitely didn't give this the credit it's due. So we're going to try and same with HTML5. We're going to try and come back later with some interviews with some experts to really tell us what the hot skinny is. But that's just some of the things you can look forward coming up in CSS3. Again, it's an evolving spec. Keep your eye on it because it will change. But we're pretty jazzed about it. There's a lot of... Basically, these HTML5 and CSS3 are trying to fix all the things that we found out were wrong when, or not wrong, but just things that we didn't think of at the time when these other, the original specs came out. Because it was like the web was so new, and now we're doing just such crazy awesome things. And we've had to do a lot of hacks to do these cool things.
Like
and now
rounded
it's like,
borders.
Exactly. And so it's good to see that they're thinking of like, well, what is everybody doing? Rounded corners. Yeah. Okay, let's put that in the spec. And it makes it a lot easier for us in the future.
So in the show notes, we'll put a link to what browsers support, which types of CSS3 features, and then also have a JavaScript thing that will make IE work with the new CSS3 selectors.
Awesome. So check that out. That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so, but you can do so. You can do so by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. Also, go to faceoffshow.com, leave some feedback for the show, let us know what you guys think or what you want us to talk about. We love hearing from you guys. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.